Coming up after 28 majors now with 13 top 10, 7 top 5s, 2 thirds and 2 seconds, Xander Schauffele is your newest major champion. Plus, Nelly continues to amaze as she notches win number 6 in 7 starts. And we're getting you ready for live golf as the NCAA Women's Championship is underway, and we'll take it to you live right after Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Xander Schauffele got the animal off his back, winning his first major championship title in his 28th major championship start. Began the week as the only player in the top 5 of the official world golf ranking without a major championship. With the win, moves from number 3 up to number 2. Pretty special moment.
Welcome in, my friend. It's good to see you. Jordan Cornette, Matt Adams here with you on the wake of Xander Schauffele's big win. Nelly, as you saw in our opening, winning once again. We're very excited about the NCAA Women's Championship coming up. We're going to take you to live coverage as soon as we finish here today. You know, you talked about it. You called it the animal off his shoulders, Jordan. And to me, it was. He cast off that cloak of being the best player to have not won a major yet. The question I have is, where do we go from here, right, with what we can expect of Xander Schauffele to have come as close as he did? You heard the numbers that I gave you at the start of the show. Is this a Xander Schauffele now it's ready to go to a whole new level, and we're all there for it?
Yeah, it very well could be. What's most impressive to me for a guy like Xander, who entering Sunday, I think a lot of people are like, seen this story before. What's going to happen? Then you see the bogey on 10, and you go, okay, this is a response, a champion response on 11 and 12. To have those birdies, to go out there and earn this championship, that's what stood out to me most. He didn't back into this one. He had to deliver, especially late on 17 and 18, and he did. He won in true championship form, firing that 65 on.
And that true championship form that Jordan's talking about is a 263, setting a new PGA championship record. And look at all the records that have been established in what he did this week. Yes, it was a receptive golf course, but everybody was playing the same golf course, and only one player finished at the top at 21 under par. Xander Schauffele reflected on it all with the media afterwards with some telling insights.
Your major record before you got here, from the outside, always looked like deeply impressive. Did you look at it that way, or were you more apt to look at it as lacking?
I don't think I'd ever look at it as lacking. I looked at it as someone that is trying really hard and needs more experience. And, you know, all those close calls for me, even last week, you know, that sort of feeling, it gets to you at some point, and it just makes this even sweeter. You know, I told Todd Lewis, he asked me sort of, you know, how I felt about the week, and I said, it'll make my next one even sweeter. So this is... I know it's a major, but just winning in general, this is as sweet as it gets for me.
Mate, Danny, so you've had the narrative thrown at you for at least the last few months, maybe the year. You know, I know you said it wasn't bothering you, but let's be honest now. How annoying was it to hear it from us over and over again? When is it going to come? And how do you use that as fuel?
Definitely a chip on the shoulder there. It is what it is at the end of the day. I mean, you guys are asking the questions, probing, and I have to sit here and answer it. You know, it's a lot easier to answer it with this thing sitting next to me now, obviously. But, it's just fuel to my fire. It always has been growing up, and it certainly was leading up to this.
You always, at the beginning of your career, fed off the underdog status. Then you almost had a lull when you became elite, somewhat winning. How did you get back to believing the underdog again?
I referred to it earlier. All of us are climbing this massive mountain. At the top of the mountain, Scottie Scheffler. You know, I won this today, but I'm still not that close to Scottie Scheffler in the big scheme of things. So, you know, I got one good hook up there in the mountain, up on that cliff, and I'm still climbing. You know, I might have a beer up there on that side of the hill there and enjoy this, but you know, it's not that hard to chase when someone's so far ahead of you.
Xander, I know, you know, as an athlete, you always have to believe in yourself and believe that you're going to win. But was there ever a moment that you maybe doubted that this major championship win would come when you look at all the great players out there who don't have major titles?
I just, you know, I believe in positive self-talk. You know, I will tell myself, I'll speak to myself. I just kept doing it. You know, when you believe something enough, it'll happen. And, you know, I never really... It starts to wear on you, I'd say, and that's kind of what I told Austin. I really want to make sure I make the right decisions. I don't want to get impatient, and you know, I believed in what I can do, and you know, this is just fruits of it.
Jordan, a couple of interesting comments there from Xander Schauffele. One about continuing motivation, continuing to climb that mountain. He hasn't reached a summit with this. It's a nice platform. He said maybe he'll have a beer, but there's still more to come. And then the talk about positive self-talk. It is interesting that when you look at players that have had the most number of runner-ups in all majors without breaking through, it is Colin Montgomery who's number one with 5. So Xander Schauffele at 2 was quickly starting to climb that ladder. Now, of course, he has broken through. I want to tap into your expertise here with basketball and team play for a second, because what I want to ask you about is when you have a player, when you have a team, when you break through, when you get to that threshold that you have tried so hard for so long to get to, what changes and what does it foretell about what lie in the future?
Well, Maddie, it's a great question. I immediately go to the sport I played, being basketball, as a collegiate basketball player, and I also cover that here under the NBC umbrella with Peacock. I think about a blue blood. I think about Coach K, and I think about Duke basketball. I think about going back and thinking about his 88 team, his 89 team. Those two teams went to the Final Four. Then in 90, they ran into a buzzsaw that was Las Vegas. That's 3 times you get right there, and you go, are we the team? Well, Coach K, through belief, through positivity, and through darn good players, said, you know what, 91 is going to be our year. They broke through. They won that championship. You know what they did the next year? Turned around and won another one. And you know what Coach K did when it was all said and done? Became the all-time winningest in the sport coaching, adding 3 more titles. Am I going to sit here in front of you, Maddie, the first time working with you and say that Xander's going to go down as the all-time winningest golfer? Absolutely not. But the parallel I will draw is those Duke teams were so close. The metrics were all in their favor. The talent was all in their favor. They checked all the boxes, but they couldn't get over the hump. Something needed to push them through, and when they did, they went on a run. Now, do I believe that Xander has other majors soon to be added to his resume? I do believe that. Greatest of all time, that's not a conversation. That'd be ludicrous. But I do believe something mentally allowing him Sunday at Valhalla to do this is going to spark a special run.
Yeah, it was interesting, wasn't it? Because this was a run that had signs of going back to the Xander that we've seen before. You get to a certain point of adversity, and then you either stall out or you even go backwards. Instead, he ascended. He went forward. He broke through.
Yeah, and Maddie, think about it. I mean, there's some guys in that group, those 30-somethings, that are still chasing that first one. And that window, even though you have a long time still as a runway, you start to wonder, when's it going to be me? Xander was the best guy through his bag all week long. Xander was a guy, time and time again, when it's you needed to say, okay, are we going to zig or are we going to zag? He made the proper move. He showed, okay, this is my time. Now, I'm not going to read too much into it and say maybe it helps that Scotty, you know, was not truly in contention when he went to sleep Saturday night. Maybe there's a sense of feeling there. Another basketball reference for you. When MJ wasn't playing in 94, the Rockets go, our time is right now. But I believe whatever the circumstance was that it provided for Xander to do it this time, with all the metrics and the only thing missing, that intangible of mental, to do it now, you've got to believe you're going to see some special things from him.
Awesome stuff. Sports are sports, right? Let's continue this conversation with our Golf Today roundtable as we welcome in Golf Channel senior writer Rex Hoggard and GolfDigest.com contributor Shane Ryan. Okay, gents, so let's jump into this. What we just saw, all that we saw, and all that went along with it, and Rex, I guess I'll start with you. This was a huge breakthrough for Xander Schauffele. As I was listening to his sound, Rex, the first question that popped in my mind was, does he have a chip on his shoulder when he plays his best, and can he channel that?
Oh, I think he definitely has a chip on his shoulder. And I'll go back, as good as yesterday's interview with him was, and it was very, very good, I went back to the pre-tournament interviews after he came up short last week at the Wells Fargo Championship. And he was asked specifically how those defeats impact him. How do you channel that energy? And it was kind of a psychological profile in what makes Xander Xander. He said losing only makes him want to win more. He didn't get discouraged. He didn't turn tail. He didn't start questioning himself if he was going down the wrong path. And we saw that today. And to Jordan's point, yes, Scottie Scheffler not truly being in the mix on Sunday probably made it a little bit easier. But I think having Bryson DeChambeau looking over his shoulder also made it pretty difficult.
Shane, as you kind of watch what we all saw play through Sunday and Xander ended up winning his first major, what was your biggest takeaway?
Yeah, you know, I think Xander made the next transition in his career. I mean, obviously an unbelievably talented player. Previously on Sundays, he hadn't exactly been collapsing, but he was like Jell-O, right? There was a little bit of wobble, kind of solid, kind of not. He's gone from Jell-O to, you know, rock solid at this point. That was really, really impressive what he did yesterday. He had plenty of times where, you know, he could have, you know, just made one mistake, really. That would have been enough. And, of course, like Valhalla, where everybody was charging, where Bryson was charging. You know, even just to miss this putt that you're showing now, to make par on this hole, that would have been plenty. I mean, that would have cost him. In every single moment, he faced the demons, he faced the pressure, and he came through. And that's almost always what you have to do when you win your first major. And you just, I think, saw a definitely new guy. And I think Sundays are going to be a lot easier for him. Going forward.
Now, you heard Rex mention the fact that Bryson DeChambeau was, as he said, breathing down his neck. Here is Bryson yesterday giving us a perspective that perhaps he's changed somewhat.
On my side of the coin, disappointing, but whatever. I played well. Didn't strike at my best all week. Felt like I had my B game. Pretty much my putting was A+, my wedging was A+, short game was A+, driving was like B. And, you know, shot 20 under par in a major championship. Proud of myself for the way I handled adversity. Definitely disappointing, but one that gives me a lot of momentum for the rest of the majors. And you know, I said today it was closing time, but it'll be closing time, hopefully over the next couple majors.
Bryson, you mentioned that you've learned a lot this week and this year. What have you learned?
Equipment matters. I've learned I can play golf with my golf swing even when I'm not hitting it well. When I'm hitting it well, I got to take advantage, and I wasn't able to do that at Augusta. My putting failed me, but then clearly I putted well this week. I figured some good stuff out. And I just got to remember those things and use that for the U.S. Open. I'm excited for Pinehurst.
Bryson, you had some really big moments out on the course this week worth celebrating. I'm curious, how have you kind of embraced being a true showman out on the course and celebrating those big moments and kind of letting all your emotions out?
Yeah, it's actually funny. YouTube has helped me understand that a little bit more. And when the moment comes, knowing what to do, what to say, how to act is really important. And, you know, when I was younger, I didn't understand what it was. Yeah, I'd have great celebrations and whatnot, but I didn't know what it meant and what I was doing it necessarily for. And now I'm doing it a lot more for the fans and for the people around and trying to be a bit of an entertainer that plays good golf every once in a while.
And then to follow up on that, I know you thrive off of the fans and they seem to rally around you a little bit, you know, especially down the stretch. But walking from 9 to 10, we kind of heard you say either do better or be better. How much do you have to, you know, give yourself that self-talk and how much do you thrive off of that as well?
Yeah, sometimes I just got to look myself in the face and just say you got to get it done. No matter what's going on, no matter what you feel right now, you've got to get the ball in the hole in the least amount of shots. Be better. I got to do better. And I did. It just was one shot short.
Got time for two more. Mike, 3, then 10.
Hi, Bryson. Everything that's kind of led up to this stretch of golf for you, you know, the equipment changes, even some of the stuff you're doing off the golf course with YouTube, like what has facilitated this run for you?
A lot more time, you know. As funny as it sounds, as weird as it sounds, you know, having a lot more time back at home to work on my game, to work on content creation with my team that I have back at home allows me to plan and strategize a little bit better than what I have. And, you know, like y'all said, I empty the tank when I'm at tournaments. So sometimes if I'm on a 2-3 week stretch, I get pretty drained. And having that time to just rest and recover is super important for me. And it's given me a lot of time to reflect on what's most important outside of golf as well.
Bryson, you've talked a lot about being an entertainer, but I'm wondering today, were you entertained?
With myself?
Yeah.
Yeah. I shocked myself a couple times, yeah. Putted fantastic. I don't feel like I missed one big moment putt out there. There's obviously a couple misses, but every time I needed to get up and down, I got up and down, and every time I needed to make a 6-7 footer, I did. So definitely surprised myself, impressed myself, and I know I can do it again. It's just going to take some time. Got to figure some stuff out. Thanks.
It's definitely been impressive. Man amongst the people here. This is Bryce DeChambeau. Tries to give this ball to a kid. This is courtesy of Ryan Balaji in this video. A man takes it away. Bryson steps back in and says, yo, dude, the ball was for the kid. Give it back to the kid. So Shane, here's my question for you. What we're seeing from Bryson now, is this a sign of a man of the people? Is this a sign of maturity? Is this a sign of maybe it was a Bryson we never really knew that well?
Yeah, you know, I hate to, this is such a cop-out, but the answer is, who knows? I heard a quote recently that was something like, people never really change, they just rebrand. I don't know if that's true. That's kind of a cynical view of people and of the world. But if this is a rebrand, I like it. If he's changed, I like it. I thought the thing with the guy there, making him give the ball back to the kid, was the single best thing that Bryson DeChambeau has ever done. I thought that was heroic. And so hopefully that endears him to people. You know, it's not, you don't have to look back too far when Bryson was sort of at the end of his PGA Tour run, when he was getting heckled by crowds. I mean, I watched him in Memphis at the St. Jude when he had such a tough time. It was like a mob atmosphere out there.
Yeah.
Really, really unpleasant for him, and I think took a mental toll on him. So whatever you want to say about changing or rebranding or anything like that, I think whatever this move is, it was really, really good for him. It needed to happen, and he was in a really, really unpleasant place, and he seems in a less unpleasant place right now, and I think as human beings, that's all we can kind of hope for from one day to the next.
Rex, am I the only one that got a sincere kick out of the mention of this was just my B game? I mean, he still delivers some of those moments, lets you know, hey, I'm more self-aware, but I'm still Bryson.
I don't know if this is the new Bryson, the mature Bryson, whatever the case may be, or if this was performative. I don't really care, to be honest with you. I love the content for myself and those of us in the content business. He's a gift from the gods, because you look at what the tour is lacking, and I don't want to turn this into a conversation about the PGA Tour and LIV Golf, but I had a colleague that recently told me a line that stuck out to me, that the PGA Tour feels like a Marvel movie without any villains. And I'm not calling Bryson DeChambeau a villain. I'm not even calling him an anti-hero, but he's certainly an antagonist. He does things completely differently than anyone else. And now you get him to the point where he mentioned it, and that clip we just held. He's an entertainer. He realizes that. He plays golf really, really well, but he also understands the other side of it that's so important that I think some players don't quite seem to grasp, is that you're out there on a stage. You need to make sure that everyone is entertained. And you look at what he did. Like, I'll go back to what he did on 16 yesterday. He got a break with the ball bouncing out of the trees, and he took advantage of it. And if you watched him afterwards, literally dancing down the fairway, that's fun. That's good for golf.
I think the most fascinating superhero movies are when the antagonist and the line between that and hero start to become blurred. Maybe that's something that's happening with Bryson right now. You can stay with us because we have much more coming up with Rex and Shane as we continue to react to the 106th PGA Championship, including the turbulent and tragic week that was. Scottie Scheffler was right in the middle of it. What comes next for the world number one? We'll discuss after this. Welcome back to Golf Today. Quite a week for world number one Scottie Scheffler. He opened with a 67 and then remarkably shot a 66 on Friday after a confusing, a chaotic, and very dramatic and tragic situation. Remember, he was arrested following an incident with a police officer, surrounded traffic circles. He was trying to enter the golf course at the time. He struggled on Saturday to a 2 over 73, knocking himself out of contention. He had this to say about the week that was.
Scotty, with everything that's happened to this week, I'm sure it's been a tumultuous time, but can you just even try to put this week into words?
Yeah, I'm not really quite sure. You know, I think hectic would probably be a good description. Overall, right now, how I'm feeling, I'm fairly tired, definitely a lot more tired than I have been finishing some other tournaments. But, you know, I'm proud of today, how we went out there and fought. You know, I got off to kind of a slow start and was able to kind of get some momentum and post a good round and give myself some good momentum. You know, yesterday obviously was quite frustrating and a bit of a different day. But overall, proud of how I fought this week. You know, was fortunate to be out here competing, doing what I love, and you know, out on the golf course, the support this week that I got from the fans was tremendous. The support I got from the players and caddies and everybody inside the ropes was tremendous, and so I'm very grateful to have the community that we have out here on the road and to have their support. I got arrested Friday morning, and I showed up here and I played a good round of golf as well. And so, you know, I've been good throughout my career. Or I say that, you know, I've gotten better throughout my career of leaving the off-course distractions at home and kind of keeping a pretty quiet personal life. And you know, this week obviously that was not the case. And I'm not going to sit here and say that I played poorly yesterday because of what happened on Friday. You know, I just had a bad day out on the course, and you know, was proud of how I came out here and bounced back today. You know, like I said, it's great to have the support of the fans. You know, being able to play out here in front of them week in, week out is one of the greatest joys of my life, for sure. And so being able to do that this week and play another major championship, you know, it was fun. Obviously, the results weren't what I was hoping for at the beginning of the week, but overall, you know, I'm proud of how I fought this week.
We are continuing our conversation with Golf Channel senior writer Rex Hoggard and GolfDigest.com contributor Shane Ryan. So what took place? The tragic death of John Mills, the chaotic scene that followed from it, Rex, where, as Scotty said, there was a great deal of confusion. Ultimately, he was arrested. Ultimately, he was charged with four crimes, one of them a felony. Can you give us an update as of this hour and where everything stands?
Yeah, there is a bit of news. I spoke with his attorney, Steve Romines. He's in Louisville, Kentucky, obviously. His arraignment hearing, Scotty's original arraignment hearing, was scheduled for tomorrow, Tuesday, at 9 a.m. in Louisville. That has been rescheduled to June 3rd. That will also be at 9 a.m. There is an update as well. Scotty will have to attend that hearing, the arraignment hearing. Now, the plan is to plead not guilty, according to his attorney. And he also said he wouldn't speculate on what he thought was going to come from that. He did say, however, there were some reports over the weekend that the county prosecutors were going to drop the charges against Scotty. The attorney for Scotty said that's simply not true. Now, if you look at the timing of this, Scotty is scheduled to play this week at Colonial at the Charles Schwab Challenge. He has a week off, and then he's scheduled to play likely the Memorial. It's a signature event. Now, this hearing would be Monday of Memorial Week, so you get an idea of the timing on that.
I mean, as we talk about this, Rex, everybody has a different feeling about it. Confusion reigns supreme in everybody's take. But how do you process being so close to this, having covered this, being there? How do you process everything that kind of transpired involving the world's number one?
Surreal, chaotic. I mean, I think we used a lot of words over the last few days to try to explain what happened. It's absolutely amazing that he was able to do what he was able to do on Friday after spending about an hour in the county detention center. It's amazing he was able to rebound and have a good Sunday. I did think it was interesting. He told our colleague Todd Lewis on Saturday that he actually spoke with his lawyer, Steve Romines, early Saturday and got kind of an update on what was going on. And I don't think it's a coincidence that he maybe struggled a little bit. I know in that sound he just talked about he wasn't going to blame what happened on Friday morning on his play Saturday. But I don't know how that's not hanging over your head. As you pointed out, there's four charges against them. One of them is a felony charge, and it's very serious.
Shane, between the ropes, of course, Valhalla once again was the stage of great drama. So there's a lot of discussion about the golf course one way or the other. Obviously, this one was soft and it allowed for some great scoring, but it also allowed for great entertainment. What is your take on the venue on that stage?
Yeah, I mean, that's all you can say about Valhalla is that it always delivers. It takes nothing but criticism. And it had, you know, since the very first time they had a PGA there, you know, the Nicklaus Greens originally were humpbacked and everybody got mad at that. They fixed the greens and now it's, you know, pace of play and there's power lines and you know, the 13th hole is a novelty and there's all kinds of criticisms. But something spiritually about the place, I don't know what it is, but it always seems to deliver these wonderful majors. And again, yeah, we had obviously Tiger and Bob May. We had the Rory finish in the near dark against Ricky and Phil. And then yesterday was just really fun the entire day. So look, it's probably just random chance, but it's kind of fun to imagine that there's a spirit of a place, and maybe they should roll the dice one more time. I know the PGA of America sold the course, and with everything that happened off the course, it seems very unlikely that we'll ever see this again as a major venue. But in some way, it's a little bit of a shame because it's always delivered, and it's like a plucky superstar that nobody saw coming.
I'll tell you what, the crowds were magnificent throughout. Clearly a sports town. It didn't disappoint there. Shane, as we look at the next month in Pinehurst number two, there's a ton of intriguing storylines there. Some guys who have struggled up to this point, but started to figure things out there in Kentucky. I look at guys like Morikawa. I look at guys like Hovland. Reunited is a theme there with their swing coaches. Who are you most looking forward to getting more answers from as we head into our next major come June?
I think those two are a great start. Because like you said, Victor Hovland, I mean, he had that quote about maybe he wasn't even going to come to the PGA. I think that was a little flippant. I don't think he ever really considered not coming, but he certainly didn't expect to do as well as he did, as my daughter knocks on my door here. And Morikawa was another great one. He was somebody who was really struggling, and at this point he's not anymore, and he's playing really, really well. So I look at him. The other guy I'm looking at is Rory McIlroy, because he was somebody who, like, he always plays well at Quail Hollow, so it wasn't necessarily a surprise that he won there. But what he did on that Sunday against Xander Schauffele was spectacular. And so you expected that in Valhalla, and instead we kind of reverted to the normal Rory script at majors. So I'm just curious, you know, both at Pinehurst and at Troon, is he ready to make the next step? Because I really thought he was at Valhalla, and I went on record as saying that, and I got fooled again. So Rory's always somebody I'm looking at to see what he can do.
Fascinating observations, too. Hey, Rex, before we let you go, though, last week we learned, of course, of Jimmy Dunn's resignation. Another independent director has stepped down. What can you tell us about what's going on the PGA Tour from a governance side behind the scenes?
Yeah, Matt, it was the PGA Tour Policy Board. Let's don't confuse that with the new Board of Directors for PGA Tour Enterprises. That's the for-profit side of what is going to become the PGA Tour. So that, it's important to point that out. But as you pointed out, Jimmy Dunn stepped down from the board a week ago on Monday, and on Sunday, yesterday afternoon, Mark Flaherty, who'd been on the PGA Tour Policy Board for 4.5 years, sent his letter of resignation out. It wasn't nearly as accusatory, as I would say, as Jimmy Dunn's was. He didn't call anyone out. He didn't say that he felt like he was wasting his time. It was very polite. It was very professional. But it does create an interesting scenario where you only have three independent directors now on the PGA Tour Policy Board. It also creates an interesting conversation about what's the use of the PGA Tour Policy Board. As I pointed out, it's the Enterprises Board that now is making all the decisions, specifically as it comes to the ongoing negotiations with the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia. That was kind of the impetus why Jimmy Dunn stepped down. You can imagine it's a similar situation for Mark Flaherty. So we'll have to watch this develop.
Yeah, ongoing, developing seem like the buzzwords there. An intensely turbulent week in golf, no question, as we kind of try to encapsulate it all here on this Monday. Rex and Shane, beacons of information and analysis. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Let's go back inside the ropes. In an incredible week for Xander Schauffele, now a major champion and the winner of the 106th PGA Championship. We continue to react to the second men's major of the 24 season when Golf Today continues on.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Welcome back to Golf Today. This week marks the 42nd edition of the NCAA Division I Women's Golf Championship. The tournament being played on the North Course at Omni La Costa Resort and Spa in Carlsbad, California, after 3 years at Greyhawk Golf Club in Scottsdale, Arizona. We're leading you into live coverage, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Golf Channel. So after 54 holes of stroke play, here's the format for you. The top 15 teams, along with the top 9 individuals not on an advancing team, have moved on to an additional day of stroke play. Today's stroke play round will determine the 8 teams who will advance to the match play competition tomorrow and tonight. An individual 72-hole champion will be crowned.
Let's take a look at the individual leaderboard. And there you can see Sinosik right at the top and 13 under in a commanding lead at that. And then as you just heard Jordan talking about the teams and you heard me talking about a great run by Stanford, there they are atop of the team tally.
And someone who knows a thing or two about winning the team side of the thing is our colleague, Julia Johnson. Johnson had a great college career and was a member of the 2021 women's team that won the championship back there with Ole Miss. Check out the elation. The team got the 4-1 win over Oklahoma State University, with Johnson winning her match in the finals 4-3. Johnson, a member of our broadcast team this week at Omni La Costa Resort and Spa, and we'll hear her on the coverage at 6 p.m. Eastern on Golf Channel. She joins us now. So, Julia, I want to start with the golf course this week, the North Course at Omni La Costa Resort and Spa, playing host after 3 years at Greyhawk Golf Club in Scottsdale. Curious to get your thoughts on that new venue and the setup. Does a change in venue provide advantage of any sorts for any team in the field?
I don't know about an advantage. I think a lot of teams got very comfortable at Greyhawk, so you're seeing maybe a few new teams come here. It's a new course. You can pull driver a little bit more out here. We're seeing Clemson play well. They did not play well at Greyhawk. So you're seeing a few teams that are taking advantage of a new venue, but you're also seeing teams that played well at Greyhawk. They're continuing to play well here. I'm thinking about Stanford, Texas A&M, two teams that made it to the semifinals at Greyhawk the past 2 years. They're coming out here, and they're showing that good golf can play on any golf course.
Julia, it wasn't the performance that we expected, though, to see from top-ranked amateur Ingrid Lindblad. She opened with rounds of 73, 81, 75. What are your thoughts on that surprising performance and the impact that it's had on LSU?
Well, I think you can turn this negative, as you could say, about Ingrid's play into a big positive. It's allowing other players on LSU's team to really step up. Taylor Riley, the fifth player counting the past 2 days. And I think that that can instill a lot of confidence into LSU as they hopefully progress into match play. Ingrid is... she's the best player in the world, and they need her to play well in match play. But you're having LSU players really step up. You're seeing the depth of LSU, and I think that could really bode well heading into match play if they do make it.
Nobody better to ask than a national champion who happens to be on the coverage this evening. What should we be most excited about, or what are you most excited about with tonight's play, Julia?
I'm excited for the race for eight. I think it's going to be one of the tighter races we've seen the past few years. You have really good teams right now, right on that outside bubble, thinking about Duke, Arkansas. These are really good teams that are trying, they're fighting their way in to make it to the top eight. And that'll be really fun to watch. This course is difficult when the wind's blowing. The wind's blowing right now. It's picking up. The greens get firmer as the wind continues to blow. So you really need to see teams go out there, put up a good score, and try to make it in that top eight.
Beautiful backdrop there behind Julia. We look forward to your coverage tonight. Thank you for the time.
Thank y'all.
Just a reminder, here's what's coming up at the NCAA Women's Golf Championships. Tonight, individual final. Tuesday, team quarterfinal and semis. Wednesday, team championship match. 6 p.m. Eastern on Golf Channel and Peacock from Omni La Costa Resort and Spa in Carlsbad, California.
All right, here's a watch list for the 2024 Anika Award. It's presented by Stiefel. The award is given annually to the most outstanding player in women's college golf. And there you can see all those that are contending for this very, very prestigious award. And it is definitely going to be hard, hard fought. Back with more after this. Back on Golf Today. Xander Schauffele and Austin Kizer, longtime friends and college teammates at San Diego State University. Kizer, of course, has been on the bag for Xander's biggest career moments, including Sunday's win at Valhalla. He spoke to the media afterwards about their strategy and their approach that led to victory.
Yeah, just kind of got a bad break against that. You know, he's standing in the bunker. It's like basically playing t-ball at that point. And I told him, I'm like, hey, numbers are better from the left. He kind of wanted to go right, which either way is fine if you put it in the right spot. If he's in fairway, it's, you know, he could pitch it up there close regardless. But, you know, with that hook lie, it just kind of went to a great spot. And I walked up, you know, hand him his wedge. He goes, I mean, if I knew it was going to be here, I would have taken it. So he was comfortable with that and hit a great chip in there. It was closer straight. It actually went a touch left. I couldn't tell. You know, I didn't get in there. That was his moment. You know, he's been reading greens great all week. You know, all of his misses, you know, there's a couple of spike marks or whatnot. He hit great putts that were burning edges. So he trusted his reads. I told him on going to 10, I'm like, dude, you're reading the hell out of it. Just keep putting and they're going to fall. So, you know, he made the one and it was awesome.
What did he show today?
I mean, grit. I mean, he bogeyed a par five, you know, right when we're in the mix. And it's like, you didn't see him change one bit, you know, next two holes he birdies. So he just showed grit and that's who he is as a person. You know, he never gives up. So. It was great. We got that win today.
Kizer, of course, was on the bag for Xander when he won the gold medal in Tokyo. Xander looks ahead to Paris Olympic Games when we return. Continuing on Golf Today, Xander Schauffele wins the PGA Championship, earning his eighth PGA Tour title along the way, that in his 175th start at 30 years, 6 months, and 24 days. He wins his first major championship title in his 28th major championship start. Of course, he won the gold medal at the Tokyo Olympics. That was back in 2021 as a member of the United States men's golf team. Schauffele made a birdie at the 17th hole on Sunday to take a one-stroke lead and make par to the last to secure his win.
Xander, what will it mean for you to go back to Paris in the Olympics now as a major champion?
It's just a cherry on top. You know, it's totally separate to competing in the Olympics. I mean, it definitely helps with the qualifying process. That was my goal, obviously, was to qualify. The U.S. team is a strong one. It's a hard one to qualify for. So I'm hoping, you know, I imagine this win probably secures me into qualifying for the Olympics. But that's a whole different ballgame, winning that one. But definitely be able to pull some confidence from this thing.
It's time to start thinking about it. Here are the current standings for the United States men's Olympic golf team in Paris. Scottie Scheffler, Xander Schauffele, Wyndham Clark, Patrick Cantlay right now are where we're looking. Top 15 world-ranked players qualify, a max of 4 players per country, remember. After the top 15, then you can see from there as it unfolds.
That is, I can hear the music. I get the goosebumps.
Yeah.
Speaking of Olympic gold medalists, Nelly won the gold medal in the Tokyo Olympics in 2021, shooting 17 under to beat Monet Inami and Lydia Ko by one stroke. Her success in 24 continues to all the golf world. And the wins, they keep piling up for Nelly Korda. The world number one shot a 1 under 71 on Sunday to win the Mizuho Americas Open. And with this win, Korda earns her 14th LPGA Tour victory and her 6th win this season. She's the first player since MB Park in 2013 to record 6 wins in a single season.
It is truly incredible. Nelly Korda is the 4th player in LPGA history to win 6 or more times in a season before the end of May. The only other player to do it in the last 70 years, Lorena Ochoa in 2008. We'll see a tee up next at the U.S. Women's Open, of course, in Lancaster Country Club. She spoke with our Tom Abbott afterwards about her victory.
Well, it's another week on the LPGA Tour and another win for Nelly Korda. This one, though, Nelly, seemed like it was a bit more difficult coming down the stretch, battling with Hannah Green. How would you assess today and how difficult it was to get the win?
Gosh, that front nine, it was just very poor golf by me. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It was just not good. And then kind of flipped the switch after 9 holes. It was a battle all day with Hannah. She played really good golf from the get-go, and I loved battling with her. I would consider her one of the people that I actually talk to quite a bit out here on the LPGA Tour. I'm very friendly with her, so it was different, but I'm glad that, you know, we had a great battle coming down the 18th hole.
Is it important to have a week off now coming into probably the biggest event of the year for you, the U.S. Women's Open?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to enjoy some time off. Jess is actually coming over with Grayson, so I'm really, really looking forward to seeing them and getting my mind off of golf and recharging my batteries and then getting back into, you know, the grind again to get ready for pretty much our biggest event of the year.
How much do you know of Lancaster Country Club where you'll play the U.S. Women's Open?
Absolutely zero. I've never been there. Jess is the only one that's played out there, so maybe she'll give me some tips in the next few days.
Is that a help or a hindrance to you when you don't know a golf course?
I actually like it. I feel like when I'm over-prepared, I have expectations of myself, so I like to just see it and hit it, really. That's how I approach my entire game. That's why I think I'm a pretty fast player, because when I start to overanalyze things, it does get me into a bit of trouble.
So with more in this historic run, we welcome in Golf Channel contributor Ron Cyrak. And Ron, we just heard from Nelly that while this U.S. Open venue will be a new one to her, of course, 3 of the 6 events she just won were new venues to her as well. How historic is this run that we're witnessing right before our eyes?
Well, you know, we're hearing her name thrown around with names like Louise Suggs and Annika Sorenstam and Nancy Lopez. That's pretty historic. But I think what we really got to grasp here, we're seeing the maturation of a player, both in terms of the quality of her game and in terms of her attitude about her game, that's lifting her to an entire level from being a star to being a superstar. She's pushed the ceiling incredibly high now, and it's going to be really fun to see where it goes from here.
Ron, I'm glad you mentioned that maturation because that's immediately where I go. You covered, obviously, her first major win back in 21. To see where she is now, I mean, shot out of a cannon to begin this season, 6 of 7, is incredible. What have you noticed most from that first major win to where she is now as it pertains to that maturation?
You know, there's some technical stuff that's there, obviously. She was always a good iron player, but she's lifted that to a really high level right now. Hit 73% of her greens in regulation last year. She's hitting 76% this year, number one on tour. That's helped lower her scoring average more than a half a stroke per round. But to me, the biggest thing that I see is her belief in herself. I think her belief has finally caught up to her ability. Look, good players know how to win with their A game. Great players learn how to win with their B game. And we saw that from her. She came into Liberty National off the disappointment of having her winning streak broken, where she didn't play that badly. Rose Zhang just played great. And she started out her final round on Sunday not playing well at all. She made 3 bogeys in the first 7 holes. She was turned in 38, but she made no bogeys over the last 11 holes, closed with a 33, turned what could have been a 74 or a 75 into a 71. That's what champions do. You make your bad rounds not that bad. And that's what she's starting to do right now. She really believes how good she is.
Ron, when we talk about Suggs or Lopez or Sorenstam or any of the greats, there are certain traits to great champions in any field of sport, certainly in golf. What is it that you see in her aside from this confidence that you just noted? What is it about her makeup that is starting to put her into that realm?
You know, the three greatest winners that I've covered are Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, and Annika Sorenstam. And what they had in common is they not only forgot their disappointments, they not only forgot their losses, they forgot their wins. If they won a golf tournament, they went out and played the next week as if they never won a tournament before in their life. They never lost that intensity and that desire. And I'm starting to see that in Nelly. She's going out there and giving it her all every time out there, not mailing in one shot, not mailing in one round. And that's really, you know, I don't know if you can teach that in somebody. I think it's just something that's in somebody that makes them special. And I think she's now tapped into that part of herself, that passion.
You know, Ron, fans of sport, media that cover sport, like all three of us sitting here enjoying this conversation, so many times it comes up in sport, especially in the sport of golf, needing a face of the sport. Scottie Scheffler's become that on the men's side, and clearly it's Nelly on the women's side, but both are very similar when you comp them in terms of they're not the eager, put them in front of the pulpit, let them preach, let them embrace the bright lights. As she continues on this path, shot out of a cannon, as she started to ease into being the face of the sport.
Yeah, you know, I think both Scottie Scheffler and Nelly Korda are still sort of being underappreciated for what they're accomplishing because they are sort of low-key personalities. There's not that Tiger Woods dynamism about them. But I do think, look, there's a Caitlin Clark effect here. Women's sports has been pushed to a front burner right now, and people are paying attention to it in a way that they never have before. And Nelly does have a chance to be that person for the LPGA, who can be the face of this tour, lift it to another level, and bring in those casual fans who sometimes they know that the LPGA is out there. They don't really pay a lot of attention to it. She can reach those casual fans and really grow the audience of the women's game.
You heard me mention when you first came on with us, Ron, that the U.S. Open course is not one that she's familiar with in Pennsylvania. And I'll put you on the spot, too. How much is the sky the limit? What are you expecting from her in our national championship?
First off, I can tell you, I'm familiar with Lancaster Country Club. I went to college there and played golf there about 52 years ago, I think. It's a great William Flynn gem, and people are going to love it there. I don't expect to see Nelly Korda backing down at all. I think that she is at that level right now where, look, the great ones believe that they're going to win. What the great Tom Weisskopf quote about Jack Nicklaus on Sunday, Jack knew he was going to beat you. You knew Jack was going to beat you. And Jack knew that you knew that he was going to beat you. You know, I think Nelly's starting to get that attitude about herself. She's going out there expecting to win. That's a huge step for any athlete to have.
I got to say, Ron, I think me and Maddie are expecting much of the same when Nelly steps on any course with how she's playing. Ron, we really appreciate the time.
Great being with you guys. See you down the road, my friends. We'll be right back.
Great stuff from Ron. Let's see who's in the race to the CME Globe. No surprise here. Nelly Korda remains in the top spot with a sizable lead. Hannah Green finished runner-up to Nelly on Sunday, sits in second, while Lydia Ko rounds out the top three. Golf Today, back with more after this. Xander Schauffele can now call himself a major champion. What a performance he put on at Valhalla Golf Club. We continue to react to the 106th PGA Championship as Hour 2 rolls along on Golf Today right now.
Golf Today.
As we say hello and welcome back, hour number two, Matt and Jordan taking you through the second hour of the show today. Dude, we've covered a lot of ground already. I mean, I guess the place to start with, what has stood out to you so far with all the things we've discussed, all the things that we've seen?
How we've talked about Xander, and it's nice to talk about a guy who's been so close so many times. And, you know, as I assess him becoming a major champion, it wasn't a fluke, Maddie, right? This wasn't something that a guy popped out of nowhere. He'd been so close so many times.
Well, he paid his dues.
He's been so good. Yeah. Look at his resume. He's been as good as anybody that's not named Scottie Scheffler this entire year. And now he gets, I keep talking about it, that animal off his back. And now I get excited to see what's in front of him. I love watching the threshold. Guys break through, or young women break through the threshold. And we've seen it with Xander now.
Well, it was also, too, because he got run over the tournament before with Rory McIlroy. And then he closes on this one. So
it's
it kind
so much
of
about
writes
what was
a whole
in between
chapter.
The ears for him, right, Maddie? I mean, that was it. You know, yeah. How is he going to respond from last week? I don't want to say giving it away. Rory was on fire, but yes, giving it away. And then not having it. And then Sunday, that sloppy hole on 10. Here we go again. Then he stomps through with the birdie on 11, took that risk on 12, finished with a birdie there. And then, of course, how he finished 17 and 18, that shot with the ball a foot above him.
Yeah.
And then he sticks it. And he gets the birdie that he needed to go ahead and win.
Absolute grit. There's no doubt about that. Time now for Winning Moments presented by Wynn Grips. Valhalla Golf Club has delivered great excitement at the PGA Championships that have been played there. 96, Mark Brooks with a birdie on the 72nd hole to force a playoff. And Kenny Perry, remember, Perry was in the TV booth. He thought he'd have time to warm up. He didn't. He made a mess of the first playoff hole, and Brooks won his lone major championships. How about as we move forward to the year 2000, memorable in so many ways. Remember, it was Jack Nicklaus's last. He was paired with Tiger the first two rounds. Passing of the torch, Tiger won the previous two majors by 23 shots, so fans wanted a heavyweight bout. They got the unlikely Bob May, who really gave it to Tiger, gave him everything that he had. Tiger, with this famous putt right here, point to it, Tiger. Yeah. He would go on to make history. That was number three of the Tiger Slam, remember. 2014, Rory in a race against Phil and Ricky and Henrik, and against daylight and threatening skies, six guys on that final hole at one point. Rory's eagle on 10, that proved to be the difference. Nicklaus said that he thought Rory would win 15 to 20. That was his last in over a decade. He stuck on four. And then it was Sunday. Xander Schauffele at Valhalla, winning his first major championship in his 28th major championship. Ooh. He began the week as the only player in the top five of the official world golf rankings without a major championship. But with the win, he moves from number three to number two. Victory after victories. He joined the Live From Set afterward to discuss the same.
How heavy is that big boy right there?
It's so heavy. Whenever they say you can put it down, I happily put it down.
Winning all those battles and those tough moments. I mean, normally when a winner comes up to you, we go through their highlights. But because you've talked about those tough moments, because you've talked about the battles, can we go through some of the tougher spots today? Because I'd love to dive into what you were thinking about. So you were leading in driving accuracy through the week. You get up on the second tee. You hit a drive there that finishes left. We'll go through some of these shots. Just tell me what you're thinking when you walk off of this tee, your self-talk, and take us through it all the way to the second shot.
It's another kind of drive where I just didn't get the ball up enough. You know, I know how far I can hit it, so I figured, you know, if it was a little bit higher, it would have covered further. It actually was lucky not to go in the hazard. You know, I thought it was going to kind of cover that corner right there and be a little bit further, you know, past that second guy. And it was just, I know I have enough strength to get out of the rough. I thought to the right there is fine. I saw a bunch of guys getting up and down on coverage earlier. To go in that bunker was a little bit dodgy, But I, you know, early on, it's just a little bit of that self-talk is just sort of, you know, I refer to
phenomenal battle, right?
Just walk through the fire, yeah. You know,
that was
a
good miss.
You have to get this thing up and down.
Yeah, that was a good miss. You put in a spot where you could get it up and down there.
How about six? You know, you miss it to the right.
Yeah, I saw some guys getting just putting it to like 2 feet on coverage. And so I got this ball. As soon as I hit it, I hit it into the ground. Started bouncing. It's Zoysia. It's a nightmare. I was standing over this putt. I said, this is a big moment, kid. Like, get it to the hole.
You know, Brandel, hold that putt. Or not Brandel.
Thank you.
Bryson, hold up.
Did he putt it?
He did.
There you go.
Yeah. Same spot.
But being aggressive. Paul was talking about that. You got to be aggressive. And you were get to the hole. How about nine, though? Driving it down the right side. This pin's hanging over on the right. Is this in a moment to be aggressive?
Austin had me. You see those two peaks there? Austin had me going more that direction. This ball shot out a little bit more right than I thought. This was a sand wedge from like 140 yards that I nuked and kind of pushed, and it turned out perfect.
All right. How about 10? You drive it in the right bunker.
10, I wish I could have back. This is a really hard shot. Austin was like, if you don't feel comfortable, and again, I just told myself, you know, guys are making birdies. If I hit a good hybrid here, I'll hit it in that fairway, and it'll be a super easy chip. Got a little, you know, I didn't hit it far enough or left enough, and I wanted to bump this, and I just couldn't get myself to do it because I thought if I hit a high shot, I can have a tap in.
All right.
Mess.
You walk off 10. How about the reset here at 11?
I saw that was in second after this one. Almost didn't hit this one hard enough. Happy for it to catch the lip there.
And then take us through 18. Good gracious.
Yeah. I've had this lie before back at home, fortunately. Again, aggressive was my mentality all day. It was a bit of a baseball stance. The wind was off the right. You could kind of hit either side of the green. Obviously, you know, Austin was trying to get me to hit more to the left. He thought that was an easier up and down. So lucky it didn't go in that bunker, which made that bump and run a bit easier.
And if you hit it in that bunker, that's not a bad spot. That bunker lip I'm shooting is 233 with plus six is 240.
Okay.
230, 239.
Okay.
Mostly off the right.
Okay.
Touch or hurt.
So he's saying that bunker is not a bad spot. That's the one in line with the
The one in line, but he wanted me to hit it. He's like, if you can hit the left side of the green, it's actually kind of straight up to the hole. If you go right, you kind of have to go up, over, and around. Right. It could be a little bit harder. So
he's talking about the bunker left.
He was saying kind of hit it, you know, if you hit it in the front greenside bunker, great. Or if it sort of ends up just left, like in between those two bunkers, that's also great.
Which is where it was.
Which is where it ended up, fortunately. Yeah.
A lot of trust aiming this far right, though.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of have to. The only concern was to shank it, honestly, when you're kind of making a baseball swing. That definitely crossed my mind.
We've had a few of those on set this week. You weren't watching Johnson.
Oh, no.
Hopefully.
Oh, no.
And then, okay, what are you thinking as you get into this?
It's hard, I think, when you're nervous or anxious to really put a lot of punch on a pitch shot. Like, to drive it up a hill is a little bit dicey. So this putt, I saw a little left to right at first, and when I started reading it, I was like, this could be right to left. And so I played it kind of straight-ish, and it caught the edge and went in.
Led or co-led after every round. There you see Xander at the bottom of that graphic at Valhalla in 2024. Some pretty impressive names keeping company with him in that fact.
Pivoting to the collegiate game, this week marks the 42nd edition of the NCAA Division I Women's Golf Championship. The tournament is being played on the North Course at Omni La Costa Resort and Spa in Carlsbad, California. After 3 years at Greyhawk Golf Club in Scottsdale, Arizona, we're leading you into live coverage 6 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Golf Channel. An individual champion will be crowned tonight, so let's flash back to the 23 Division I Women's Golf Championship. Rose Zhang of Stanford won the last two individual championships as a freshman and sophomore, becoming the first woman ever to win multiple individual titles. What a career she has gone on to put together on the LPGA Tour, already with two professional wins. She joins a list of other notable NCAA individual champions. With more, let's send it out to Bob Papa, Women's Division I Golf Champion, notable individuals. There, let's hear from Bob now.
Well, thank you so much. We are at a new venue, as you mentioned, Omni La Costa Resort and Spa. The North Course being used. A lot of history at this venue, Karen. Gil Hance has come in and redone the golf course, and every coach that we have talked with over the last 2 days has raved about the setup and the conditions of this golf course.
I think what you're going to see these few days here is a course that is very flexible. I think you'll see it play quite differently once we turn into match play tomorrow. But for now, it's a very strategic golf course. Players have to really place their shots, and from there you can then play shots into the green. But it's very much about being precise, with the tee shots and approaches. You don't want to miss the greens around here because it's tough getting up and down.
Yeah, and the members haven't even had a chance to really get out on the golf course. They're just saving it for the NCAAs that will host both the women's this week and the men's next week. And this will be the ninth consecutive year the same venue is hosting the men's and women's NCAA Division I championships. The wind is up today, a little bit different than what we saw on the weekend. That creates a whole different set of circumstances.
It does. One thing that we have seen is that in the afternoon, the wind has been picking up, as you were saying, and it's even more so more tricky today because it's a slightly different direction than what we have seen, as you were saying. And in fairness, the greens are a little bit firm when the wind gets up as the day dries out, and the players do have to really pay close attention to that because if you miss the greens, I mean, I said earlier, it's very difficult to get up and down, easy to run through into trouble. And it does require a lot of precision. The wind throws another spanner into that wrench.
Adela Cernosic of Texas A&M holds a six-shot lead coming into this final round. Individual championship on the line as we send it over to Steve Burkowski.
Good afternoon, Bob. We take a look at Cernosic, her second here at the fifth. Opened up with three straight rounds of four under 68. Clinical the first 3 days, Karen.
Well, and that's crazy good playing because she had to deal with some of those tougher afternoon conditions as well. And just across the board, just great golf.
But others are giving chase, like Lottie Wode from Florida State, won the Augusta National Women's Amateur, her second at 11, short par four. She's seven under, six back.
And she had a low round the first round in the morning. She was seven under, but has really kind of been making a lot of par since then. Hasn't had too many opportunities for birdie, but she'll have a chance there.
She made 17 straight pars yesterday, birdied 18 to get her team into extra round of golf here at La Costa. As we head over to 16, Kiara Romero from Oregon rolls that one in. The Ducks trying to secure one of those top eight spots to move into match play on Tuesday.
Really impressive player, Kiara. Watched her on the range and just ball striking machine.
Over at the seventh, top ranked amateur in the world, the fifth year senior for LSU. This is Ingrid Lindblad, who shockingly has not had her best stuff this week. That is surprising, but LSU as a team has stepped up around her, currently in third, in great position to make match play. That could bode well for the Tigers moving ahead.
I agree. I mean, any time Lindblad isn't the number one player on the team is a bit of a shock to the system, for sure.
Back at 11, Julia Lopez Ramirez coming out of the bunker from Mississippi State, the standout junior. Great shot there. She's five under through her first 10 holes, has gotten within five of Cernosic at the top.
And kind of quietly out of the picture a little bit, playing in that group with Florida State.
Now back to the green at five, Cernosic for birdie. She finished tied for 14th at the NCAA championships a year ago. And she'll have that remaining for par. She was three under for 72 holes at Greyhawk last year. That's an Aggie scoring record for 72 holes. She will shatter that program mark here this week, barring something dramatic happening, Bob.
Cernosic's lead is five. The individual NCAA championship is on the line today here at Omni La Costa Resort and Spa. From the team component, there is a mad race. The top eight teams will advance to match play tomorrow morning in quarterfinal action. Stanford trying to be the number one seed for the fourth consecutive year. Defending champ Wake Forest well off the pace, but a lot of drama from a team standpoint and an individual standpoint. It all gets underway at 6 p.m. Eastern as we send it back to the studio.
Bob, Karen, Steve, thank you very much. We are very much looking forward to the coverage coming up at the top of the hour. There's how and where you can see it for the rest of the week as well. 1 p.m. Eastern time, team quarterfinal on Tuesday, team semifinal from 6 p.m. Eastern Wednesday, team championship match. Stay with us. We've got the 2002 PGA champion, Rich Beem. He'll be joining us on the show as he reflects on the week that was and the week that will be as he prepares for the senior PGA championship. Stay with us. Welcome back. What a performance put on by Xander Schauffele at Valhalla Golf Club. He posts four rounds under par at a major championship
for the first time in his career. He picks up his eighth career PGA Tour title in his first major championship victory.
Someone else who knows a thing or two about lifting the Wanamaker Trophy, 2002 PGA champion Rich Beem, who took the major title at Hazeltine after finishing the week one stroke clear of Tiger Woods. The victory would end up being the third and final of his PGA Tour career. And Beem teed it up last week at Valhalla for the 106th PGA Championship. He took part in the PGA Champions Dinner at Churchill Downs on Tuesday night, hosted by 23 winner Brooks Koepka. We're pleased to have Beem with us now for a past champ chat. And that man kind enough to join us now. Rich Beem, how you doing, my friend? Where are we talking to you from exactly right now?
Well, I just perused on up through Kentucky and then Indiana and then ended up in Michigan at Harbor Shores, Benton Harbor, Michigan, where the senior PGA Championship is happening this week. And I probably got a little better chance of making the cut this week than I did last week. So at least that's in theory. There's no guarantees. In theory, this could possibly be a little easier test for Rich Beem.
Well, let's talk those good vibes from 22 years ago. And 2002 was pretty good to you, that major championship, that PGA championship. And a guy by the name of Tiger Woods involved in it. So that's a cool story for life for just about anybody, Rich. What do you recall most from that special day in 02?
At my age, I'm trying to just reflect on all the videos that I can see about it to kind of help spur on those moments. You know, probably more than anything, the affinity that I had for Hazeltine and kind of how I the golf course from moment one really kind of seemed to suit my eye. I enjoyed playing it. I enjoyed some of the dog legs where I could take advantage and take driver and hit it over some of those dog legs and things like that. And, you know, basically just enjoying being in, having an opportunity to win on Sunday, teeing in the last group with Justin Leonard. That's probably the biggest thing I take away more than anything else. And the funny thing is, every time I go back to Hazeltine, I'm going, how on earth did I play that good for 4 days? Because the golf course is still a beast. But, you know, it was just one of those special weeks and special moments that I had. And I was playing well when I was going into it. I just won the International 2 weeks prior. And the game was there. But, you know, once you get to a major, you just don't know exactly how your mind and body are going to react to it. And thankfully, mine reacted quite nicely that week.
Rich, you are the perfect one that we can ask you about then this, that breakthrough, that major championship for you. We just saw Xander Schauffele break through. He had been knocking on the door, but he is now a major champion. What's your reaction to everything that you saw, and how do you think it will impact him?
Yeah, I mean, Xander's performance last week was just unreal. I just, from the moment he shot 62, you're kind of thinking, okay, he is completely done with what happened on Sunday when Rory overtook him at Quail Hollow. And I just think that, you know, the way he attacked that Sunday, I thought that the big message that he sent to the rest of the field on Sunday was that birdie putt that he had on the first hole. When he knocked that in, I thought to myself, okay, anything that has happened putting-wise over the last year or two is completely gone, because I think that what we saw at Quail Hollow is he came up shy quite a few times on long putts. Most noticeably, me, was the third hole when he was down the hill from 35 feet and left it 4.5 feet short. But I think that, you know, what I saw yesterday was a completely different Xander, completely different mindset going into that final round. And again, though, it was more about a statement that he was out there having fun on a golf course that he thoroughly enjoyed. And all the birdies that they had to make, it's not like we were playing in Palm Springs where you know the birdies are going to come early and often. You have to go out there and you still had to earn them out there on that 7,500-yard golf course. But just the way that he was doing it, he seemed so at ease. And listen, Xander's a completely different player than I ever could have been when I won in 2002, because he's got, what, 8 victories now, including the major championship, Olympic gold medal. This guy is the real deal. I mean, if you just look at his swing every single day and how good it is, how repeatable it is, I mean, the sky's the limit. I mean, this guy's always been a phenomenal, phenomenal player, and just glad to see him kind of get that breakthrough maiden major championship, because I think that not winning for so long really was kind of eating at him. And to go out there yesterday and perform like he did, I expect to see a lot more major titles coming his way.
Rich, you know, there's a lot made of, as you talk about, you know, there are birdies out there, but you got to go get them. There's a lot made of, I call it pulverizing is what Valhalla was this past week. A lot of criticism, fair or not, about, you know, how it played and it being a major. What was your takeaway, not only from Xander, but what you saw from everybody out there, including yourself?
It was an interesting dynamic. I was having a conversation with some of my my cohorts at Sky Sports, Wayne Riley being one of them. He says, it doesn't matter, I think, in this day and age, how long you make golf courses. I don't think these players are ever going to be bothered by the fact that they're going to be, I think yesterday I played at 75-44, par 71. These players aren't, they're not affected by length. They're not fazed by it whatsoever. And so the longer you, the bigger the golf course, the bigger the venue you go to, it just makes, you know, them have to try and step on the driver a little bit more. I think the PGA still did a fantastic job of setting the golf course up. Listen, the place was flawless. I mean, everything that they had, all the rains, that golf course was in perfect shape. I thought it was presented beautifully. The one thing that we didn't have last week that might have helped the scores not get so low was lack of wind. You know, when you got soft conditions, no wind, you know, fairly generous fairways, you're going to have a hard time, you know, in perfect greens as well. You're going to have a hard time containing the best in the world, especially when they start feeling it in their fingertips. So to go out there and watch Xander continue to make birdies, as did Bryson DeChambeau, you know, and you're just kind of like one of these moments in time where you're just like, listen, this is when guys are feeling it, they're going to be able to take it low. And that doesn't happen to everybody every single tournament, but it certainly did for Scotty yesterday. Sorry, for Xander. Gee, many Christmas.
And, I mean, it makes sense to misspeak and say Scotty. I mean, Scotty's always in a hunt.
I'm going to pick up on the cue. Let's ask you about Scotty because, I mean, you were inside the locker room. How shocking was what happened to Scotty? What was the buzz on the ground? Is it fair for us to ask the question, since you raised his name, of what could have been?
You know, I think more than anything else in the locker room, you know, Billy Horschel was in there, then I sat there with my son and my caddy last week, Eric. And I think that we were more in shock about the death of John Mills, to be fair. Mm-hmm. And when we kind of heard about what was going on with Scotty, it didn't seem real. It didn't seem like it was accurate, because we going back and forth like, no, that this is made up. That picture of him in an orange jumpsuit, like, come on, why would he have to put on an orange jumpsuit to, you know, if he actually did get arrested? And so I think in the locker room, we were just a little bit behind the times about what was actually going on out there. And then you kind of get some trickle information through players, caddies, so on and so forth. And obviously on social media. And I think that we were all just in a bit of shock. I think, you know, I think Scotty's in the correct. I think it was just a massive miscommunication. I got there at 5:05 in the morning. There was hardly anybody out front there, but there you could see in the distance where John Mills tragically lost his life. You could see squad cars, ambulances, all those flashing lights everywhere. And then when you have more cars coming in and now the reflection is coming off of the ground on wet surfaces, black roads, dark skies. I mean, it just had a massive opportunity to have something like what happened with Scotty take place. And I think it was just very unfortunate for everybody involved, you know, not just for Scotty, but also the police officer that was involved. I mean, obviously something happened there where he tried to stop Scotty. He must have been dragged by the car somehow because his pants got ruined. He had to go to the hospital to get looked at. But, you know, it's a very bizarre set of circumstances how it all came down. And I you know, what the funny thing is that we actually asked a couple of writers about, you know, what their perception of Scotty Scheffler were afterwards, and all of a sudden they're excited about it. He's no longer this boring guy. And I'm thinking to myself, what's so boring about going out and winning tournaments week in and week out and just saying his life isn't going to change? To me, I commend that guy. And you know, Scotty's just, he's not only the best player in the world, but he's one of the nicest guys you're ever going to come across. So, again, I think it was just a massive misunderstanding, and I can see how it took place as well, because of the heightened senses of the police officer with what had happened tragically earlier that morning.
Yeah, Rich, I think you're spot on. Speaking about mentioning John's name, I think that gets kind of lost in all this. Life was lost here. But also just how unfortunate a lot of the circumstances surrounding that turbulent day. I couldn't agree with you more on all your touch points there. Looking ahead to Pinehurst, who is most intriguing to you as we get back to golf here?
Well, right now, I mean, gosh, between Xander and Scotty. You got to, I mean, Xander, Scotty, and Xander. Sorry, Xander, Scotty, and Bryson. I'm so grunt with names right now. I just have not had enough caffeine in my body yet. I think those players are going to kind of stick their heads above. But you know who I think is kind of the interesting one is if you look at the last champion we had at Pinehurst, Martin Keimer, and you take what Victor Hovland game is like, it's this nice little peely fade out there, not afraid to hit it 24/7, you know, has historically struggled around the greens, was especially with some touch shots, has gotten a ton better, no doubt. But he's not afraid to take the putter off and around the greens. Now, wouldn't that be kind of like an interesting story about a guy that, you know, may not chip it so well this net and decide to take his putter out everywhere around the greens, world-class player looking for his first major championship? Victor Hovland, I think, would be a player that most people, especially after what happened last week and how well he played, he's got to be really excited about his chances going into Pinehurst.
For my part, book me in on Victor Hovland already on Royal Troon, Rich Beam, and I'm looking forward to seeing you out there. I know you'll be doing your Sky Sports work. But this week, the work you'll be doing, of course, is at the Senior PGA Championship. You mentioned earlier that you definitely expect the golf course to be playing differently for you this week. I'm excited about that you're in this field, this golf course. Talk to us about your level of enthusiasm for all that lies in store.
I'm always excited when I get a chance to go out and play in a tournament. I haven't been able to take advantage of it as many opportunities as presented me. I had to pass up a couple of Champion Tour event starts this year because of family obligations, and I think that massively hurt me last week. I literally was so out of my element, it was a joke. I'm going to learn from it and do better for next year. But I think that, you know, what I did learn from last week is that there is some positives in there. There's some really good things. I've got my lifelong caddy, Bill Heim, back in the bag with me this week. I'm looking forward to that as a caddy comes and rocks the table that we're sitting at. And so just kind of hanging out. Hi, Darren Clark. They just love me around here. So I'm looking forward to a golf course that's a little bit kinder lengthwise, as much as anything else. I think that, I think I took a stat, like 60% of all the shots that I hit yesterday on, par threes and par fours were with 4-iron or hybrid or 7-wood or 3-wood. So I'm thinking I'm going to probably attack a few more of these flag sticks this week and probably mid irons, maybe some short irons too.
You know, Matty, he's kissing babies. He's shaking hands. I think it's probably time we let Rich get back to it. We won't take any more of your time. Rich, in all seriousness, we appreciate it, brother.
Nothing wrong with the governor. Thanks for your time. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Good seeing you.
Welcome back to Golf Today. With the 106th PGA Championship in the books, we now turn our attention to the 124th U.S. Open at Pinehurst No. 2. Final qualifying underway in England, Japan, and Canada, as well as 10 U.S. sites, one today and 9 others on June 3rd, which is golf's longest day. Our coverage begins that Monday at noon Eastern Time. Speaking of qualifying stories, Andrew Svoboda is currently the head professional at Butler National in Illinois. He was co-medalist at Stonewall Orchard Local Qualifying on April 24th. In 2023, he made it through both stages last year to make his first U.S. Open appearance in 10 years. Svoboda coming off his PGA Championship debut at Valhalla Golf Club. And Andrew joins us now. Coming off a week at Valhalla, taking time here to talk to us as he's looking to qualify for his 6th U.S. Open, playing in that final qualifier in Canoe Brook Country Club in New Jersey on golf's longest day on June 3rd. And I want to talk about it, Andy. As you look ahead to trying to get for the 6th time that spot in the U.S. Open, what do you draw upon in your ability to make it 5 times prior that you take into that June 3rd appearance?
Well, I think I'm very comfortable at Canoe Brook. I played there probably 25 times. It sets up really good for me. It's kind of a tight golf course with difficult greens, and I've qualified there twice, so I'm definitely familiar with that course, and you know, I just love the U.S. Open. It's my favorite tournament. Obviously, I've played in 5 of them, but I would love to play in one more, especially at Pinehurst. Never played there, but man, it looks really good on TV.
Andy, I take it that your head must be spinning with the run that you're on right now, from Valhalla to golf's longest day and final qualifying in New Jersey, and hopes to get into the U.S. Open at Pinehurst number 2. But I want to ask you about, as a guy, head professional, you know, at Butler National,
you have a lot of things to balance. There's a lot of balls that you have to juggle to make all of that work. How do you find that balance, and how's it working out for you?
Well, luckily, I have the greatest boss, Rodney Ray. He allows me to play in a lot of these events and represent the club. So without him, without the support of Butler National and the membership, I wouldn't be able to play or perform like I can. So most of the credit goes to them.
You know, Andy, as you look at your resume, 11 professional wins, 14 collegiately at St. John's and a Big East champion. That's a whole lot of winning on your resume. As you reflect back to this point now, what achievement are you most proud of during this impressive run of yours?
In my career or recently?
Your career or recently. I mean, look, you've got a lot to point to, clearly.
I would say my three wins on the Corn Ferry were, you know, when I first got into a Corn Ferry event, I just wanted to make the cut, you know. So going on to win three times on that tour, as competitive as it is, as good as it is, then getting on the PGA Tour and finishing second in the Zurich Classic in 2014 was, you know, I had a chance to win. I was in the final group, a couple other events, had the chance to win, but unfortunately I just didn't play well on Sunday. But, you know, now I'm pretty far removed from the tour life. I've been a club pro for 7 years now and played in my first PGA championship at Valhalla this week as a club pro. And as one of the top 20 club pros who gets to play in that event, what an amazing experience they give us being able to compete in a major against the best players in the world. It was truly an honor to play.
Andy, I think somewhere Bob Rotella is going to be screaming at me saying, don't make him cast his mind forward, but I can't help it here. So when you get to Golf's Longest Day on June 3rd, forget that I asked you the following question. How excited are you at the prospect of getting to Pinehurst number 2 and a U.S. Open, a national championship back at that storied golf course?
Yeah, very. I mean, I'm super pumped. I've got my whole team ready, already. I just bought my plane ticket from Chicago to New Jersey, so I'm gearing up for it. I love that golf course. Like I said, U.S. Open, one of my favorite events, obviously probably my favorite event, and I would love to play in my sixth one at Pinehurst.
Awesome. What's the T-shirt that you're wearing today, my friend?
This is Engineers, my old club in Long Island I used to work at.
Good. You got to represent. Good luck in New Jersey. We're looking forward to it. We hope that you get through and we see you down in Pinehurst.
All right. Thank you so much.
Good
take care,
you.
Guys. Have a good show.
Thanks. So let's take a look at U.S. Open final qualifying results as players try to qualify for Golf's Longest Day presented by Titleist. In Japan, there you can see Ryo Ishikawa is the first name of top three qualify there. You can see Scott Vincent failed to get through in Japan. From there, we go to England. This was at Walton Heath, 3 to qualify. Forrest Mansell and Thompson all get through. And again, there's some big names that didn't, including Robert Rock, Eduardo Molinari, Matteo Manassero amongst them. And then in Dallas, at the Dallas Athletic Club, it was the Golden Blue course. You can see Echevarria, Lopez, Chikara got through. McGowan got through. And again, some big names that failed to get through. Sergio Garcia missing it by one shot. Francesco Molinari missing it by one shot. All right. You know what they're all getting ready for. Final stage U.S. Open qualify, known as Golf's Longest Day, presented by Titleist. It gets underway at noon Eastern time on Monday, June 3rd. Relation and heartbreak will walk side by side. As we welcome you back to golf today, the 2024 NCAA Division I Golf Championships are taking place in the Gil Hanse renovated and newly named North Course at the Omni LA La Costa Resort and Spa. That's actually in Carlsbad, California. The North Course is a par 72 and can be stretched to as far as 7,500 yards. It's a par 5 18th, essentially, in that challenging, challenging hole. Indeed, Amy Rogers and Brentley Romine are on site this week for us and join us right now. Folks, what's going on?
Hey there, Matt. Yeah, here alongside Brentley, and we have been checking out La Costa, the host venue for this championship for the first time after 3 years being played out at Greyhawk Golf Club in Arizona. And a coach I spoke to today tells me that players are loving this new setup. They love being able to stay right here on property. They can go over, grab a coffee with their friends in the morning, and just walk right down here to the golf course. They got some pretty sweet swag bags, I heard, too, when they arrived here on site. Some new sunglasses, some portable speakers, and some other goodies as well. But I'm curious, Brentley, as you've gotten to spend a little time around this North course, what are your thoughts? What have you seen from this golf course so far this week?
Well, first off, it kind of feels like the Olympic Village with all the athletes together. And I need to get a pair of the sunglasses, yeah. By the way. But coming into this week, the talk amongst the coaches was, because this is not only the first year of the NCAA championship at Omni La Costa, but really the first few weeks of this golf course's infancy. It's not even open to the public and resort guests yet. Because of that, they really felt like the teams and the coaches and players who were quick studies, who could really dissect a golf course without much material, because there's no data on this golf course yet. The teams that do that the best, the coaches felt, were going to ultimately perform the best this week. And I think that's what we're seeing so far. As for how the golf course has played so far, the key word has been firm. These greens, you can count on one big bounce and a check. The greens are a little slow as the earth continues to get settled in. And then another buzzword has been variance. And I think the true sign of a good golf course, the skill hands design, is the ability for a wide variety of scores to be made on pretty much every hole. And to put that into context, you look at the par 4 15th. Not only through the first three rounds did it yield the most triples or worse with 17, it also yielded the most birdies with 94. So college golf, already a pretty crazy sport as it is. I really feel like anything can happen today, and it's going to be pretty crazy over here over the final nine holes today as we look to see which teams make match play.
Yeah, we saw some craziness from Texas A&M's Adela Cernusik getting off to a hot start, three consecutive rounds of 68 to take a six-stroke lead into this day. We will crown an individual champion at the end of the day, but we haven't heard her name a lot. We've heard a lot of, you know, Lottie Wode, some of these other players in the field. What have you been able to learn about Cernusik?
Yeah, she's really unheralded. You know, the junior from France, nicknamed Fish, because she was Garrett Chadwell's first freshman when he arrived in College Station a couple of years ago. And he told me yesterday, when he picked her up from the airport that first time the summer before her freshman year, he kind of got the sense that, you know, maybe she didn't really want to be there. She was homesick that first year. Actually talked about how her set of golf clubs at the time were very much a beginner set. We're talking about graphite shafts, aqua grips, could barely get some of her longer clubs, including her fairway medals, off the ground. But really the last couple of years, she took her bumps that freshman year, but the last two seasons she's come into her own. She's a powerful player, really athletic. Her dad actually was on the Czech national volleyball team back in the day, so she has good genes. I need some of those. But I think, as we see with these amateur players nowadays, a lot of them are great ball strikers, but the putter is something that can make or break them. And really this semester she's come into her own in that. She's not won yet in college golf, but seven top six finishes this season. That is golfing her ball, and I think it's no surprise to Garrett, to Adela, to her teammates, to those who actually know her, that she's been able to do what she's done so far this week.
Yeah, and her coach told me that she is a hard worker. It's something that has inspired the rest of this team. Well, Brentley Romine, thank you for the fantastic insights as always. We're excited to see what shapes up and what is sure to be a very thrilling afternoon of golf. Matt?
Cannot wait. It comes up right at the top of the hour. Here is the watch list for the 2024 Anika Award presented by Stiefel. This is the award that's given annually to the most outstanding player in women's college golf. And of note, this is the final Anika Award watch list presented by Stiefel. Voting remains open until the completion of the stroke play portion of the NCAA championship. That is today.
So, Maddie, while we were working, the PGA champion, Xander Schauffele, was tweeting, and he said this, class act style, "I could not have done it without the support of my team, family, and friends. Thank you to the PGA Championship and the fans of Louisville, Kentucky. I'll never forget my first major victory." And, of course, Xander will not, as I talk about the class with the tweet. Also, class exemplified with everybody waiting for him as he came off 18, one of those guys being Bryson, who was hoping for that playoff to get three holes to try and go back at him, but yet still another guy waiting for him, and spoke about how excited he was for him to get that off his back and win that first major. It was pretty cool to see.
Oh, there's no doubt that it was very, very cool to see. Had fun doing the show with you today. Thank you so much for that. We had a chance to cover all that ground about what Xander was able to accomplish. The fact that Nelly won 6 in 7 starts was incredible. The fact that there will be a national champion, of course, crowned at the NCAA Women's Golf today. Amazing. All of it. Thank you so much for your company, folks. Until we are together again, be well and goodbye for now.